This is Radio Netherlands, the Dutch International Service. In today's highlight from the Radio Netherlands archives marking our 50th anniversary, the guest is Australian opera star Dame Joan Sutherland. In 1982, Neville Gray spoke to her when she was in the Netherlands starring in Donizetti's Lucia di Lammermoor, a role which in 1959 brought her to international fame.
La Stupenda, de prima donna assoluta, a jewel of a voice, the great Australian soprano Dame Joan Sutherland in the memorable Covent Garden production of Donizetti's Lucia di Lammermoor, which brought her international recognition now more than 20 years ago. Said by leading operatic critics to be singing now better than ever before, Miss Sutherland, early in May this year, sang Lucia in 9 superb performances here in Holland for the Netherlands Opera. It's indeed a pleasure to have her in a relaxed, informal atmosphere as our guest. Miss Sutherland, welcome once again to Holland. It's a great pleasure and a great honour to have you here once again, this time with a production of Lucia. It was, of course, Lucia in 58-59 that brought you to international fame, so it must be an opera that's rather close to your heart.
Oh, very close indeed. I don't know that it is my favourite opera, but my favourite opera that I perform. But to me, it is wonderful because it seemed to suddenly elevate me from just a member of the company into somebody who was supposedly different. I don't think I was any different. I think it was a combination of many things. The fact that I'd spent 7 years in the company at Covent Garden, virtually that I'd done my apprenticeship and I'd learned my art, I suppose, to a certain extent. I'm learning every day. Every day one finds new things. One adds, one hopes to one's abilities. But it was the role that I performed first in many other cities as well. It was the first role that I did for many other companies. And in a way, it's strange that it should be as late in my performing times in Holland that I should sing Lucia for the first time here. Mm-hmm. But that's the fun of a singing career, I think, that you...
Over those years, you've been involved in many new productions of it. You said this one is not entirely new, the staging of it. Is any one production over those 4 or 5 different ones that you've been in more important than another?
Well, of course, we get back to the original one again, which was with Zeffirelli doing the costumes, mm-hmm. sets, and doing the production, which was such a whole. It was just such a wonderful experience that it was very hard to shake away, to break away from anything that I did in that production. And indeed, John's production is based very much, and he freely admits it, on that Zeffirelli production, which he was a young person in the theatre then, and it impressed anyone that saw that production. It impressed them very much, and John, actually working in the theatre, absorbed it to a great extent. And he said to me when we were reproducing in Chicago or somewhere, you know what Franco did. We can't better that. But there was another production that
the La Scala one.
No, that didn't grab me at all. I'm sorry, I thought that was dire. The one that really got me was the one we did in Hamburg, which was, it took me a week to find out what the producer was getting at. And it was all, according to him, very, very psychological. This I understood, but I could not understand why he kept on sort of peering through sort of semi-closed eyes and making little squares around us all. And then, of course, I realized he's a television producer. Now, what is he doing? It's not being televised. And then he explained, at the end of a week, I said, look, I'm sorry, I really do not know what you are getting at. Could we talk about it? And we went and had a sort of cocktails together around the table, and he explained. And it was to do with the lighting. He kept on using the lights to show the whole scene and then bringing the lights in, sort of like a dollying in with a camera to do close-ups. And then he minimized the lights surrounding the characters that were actually being the ones that were speaking or singing at the time. And then I understood what he was doing. And once I understood, it didn't worry me anymore. And I found that he was a splendid producer. And indeed, he's been out to Australia and produced me in Imasnadieri out there. And it was Peter Bove who I found very exciting to work with, and I hope we get the chance again.
Also, your debut at the Met, was also a new production.
That was, no, it wasn't. It was a very old production that Lily Pons had done, goodness knows when. I think it was the 40s. It really was falling apart. And but then that was so exciting. It was such a wonderful evening. It was, really the rafters rang, and I couldn't believe the sort of acclaim of the public. It was really, as I said then, more like being in a football game.
Your mother, I believe, was very musical and a lovely soprano voice too. But what other musical influences were there back in Sydney all those years ago?
Well, mother actually was a mezzo-soprano, and the like of which I would sort of put her on a par with Ebe Stignani. It was a wonderful voice with great agility for the size of the voice. Everybody in the family was musical, actually. We had... There was a sort of group that used to meet about every second Sunday, and we used to sing solos and duets and trios. Some friends played the fiddle and a couple of others the piano, and we actually had soirée musicale in the sort of 30s and 40s, can you believe? And I sometimes used to sing tenor roles with mother. I used to sort of sing I Nostri Monti with mamma singing Azucena. Those are the influences we had, plus the old sort of wind-up gramophone, which sort of course... We graduated to an electric one when those were all the rage. Yeah. And you see, I'm beginning to get quite old. I really used to sit practically with my head underneath the wind-up gramophones. I don't know why I thought I got a better sound that way. One used to listen to Caruso and Melba and Lily Bonds and...
So it was a very broad...
And, I wanted to be a Wagnerian singer. Oh, yes. I thought that was right for me because I was that sort of size. Me physically, not my voice.
I'm sure you've been asked it many times over the years, but why do you think Australia has produced so many great opera voices?
In a way, it perhaps was the isolation. The fact that... Early on, we had to rely very much on our own talents and indeed, in the home, on our own family providing music. In fact, of course, if you lived in the country, you were a long way from various centres. Maybe there was a piano in the house. And I think people did make music more together. I think climatically, of course, it's very like Italy. Mm-hmm. I think, too, that it's a healthy climate. And we're very tough, basically. I mean, you can't keep us under, really. Mind you, we knock ourselves, which I wish to goodness that Australian habit of knocking ourselves would cease, because I think we've grown up quite a bit.
Well, Australia is not so very far away these days. Are there
It's still an awfully long way if you're on a plane for over 26 hours, I tell you. And you should know.
Are there exciting new voices coming along in Australia that we should be watching for?
Yes, there are. I think that basically the musical standard is so much higher, whereas in the sort of 30s, 40s, 50s, not so much attention was paid to a musical background. Now it's very important. I think it's a fallacy that the voices are dying out. I think that the jet kills them off. Yeah. But the voices are there if we can only find them and nurture them. There's no two ways about it.
You've been back in Australia some little while now. Are you still pleased to be home?
Yes, I am indeed. Both Richard and I have become very European in our feelings, I think, but there's something about Australia that draws you back, and something that's very satisfying when you get there. Basically, of course, again, the fantastic climate and that wonderful clarity in the air. People talk about pollution of both the sea and the air out there, and I think they really...
What are they talking about?
What are they talking about? They should visit Los Angeles.
You lived over here, though, for a very long time. What do you miss about Switzerland and Europe in general?
Oh, I think it's the closeness of everything to each other. I think the fact that we can hop in the car and drive to London, or hop in the car and drive down into Italy or up into Germany or where we will, if we had the time, of course. And that, I think, is something we're looking forward to doing when we actually perform less. But the performing seems to go on.
I was going to say, you don't have the time yet, though.
Not really, but we're talking about, in fact, very seriously, thinking of taking a sabbatical of at least 6 months very soon, and trying to do some of the things that we always put off doing.
You must miss some special people, though, that were very close to you over the years. I have a rather unusual recording of your voice I'd like to play in our program now with Sir Noel Card.
Oh, he was a wonderful friend and fantastic neighbour. We literally did have a hole in the fence that we used to sort of push our way through. In fact, ultimately, there really was no fence between us, because we managed to talk him into letting us have a piece of his garden that was really not very well cared for. It was sort of old seedling beds and so on, and we wanted a bit of lawn. We were very, very sort of perpendicular on our little piece of land. We wanted a little piece of grass, so when we took that, we didn't really bother to build a fence anymore. But he was wonderful. He was as witty as all his plays and musicals are. And he was so kind. When sometimes people think that he was very brittle, very sarcastic. He was sarcastic, but he was so funny that you, it was such funny sarcasm. There was no meanness in it at all. And he was so wonderful to people of all ages, whether they were grannies or 5-year-old or 10-year-old or whatever. And all the kids that came to visit our son, if we went to see Noel or Noel came over to us, fell for him, you know, head over heels. And he was so, so wonderful with them, so charming.
Not until you are safely married, and then only with the greatest discretion.
I see.
What is the matter?
It doesn't feel like my birthday anymore.
How did this recording come about, though, this I'll Follow My Secret Heart? Was that just a whim, or was it something you talked about together for a long time?
Well, no, we sort of decided to do some of his pieces. He was always crazy about French music, particularly Massenet, actually. It's very strange.
I love his French accent on this record.
And we used to sort of go over to his place, and Richard and he used to sort of... they used to play on the two grand pianos there and improvise for hours. And they were each always trying to put each other in a key that they found difficult to play in. But one night when they were doing this, they sort of got into some straight coward. And I started singing and Richard said, well, you know, Noel, of course, she's always been dying to do a record of your pieces, you know. He said, no, would she? And that was it, you know, and between them they chose them. And I think the only one that he didn't know was going to be on the disc was They Call Me Countess Mitzi, which I put in as a joke for him, because he didn't think I should do the comic ones, and I thought maybe I should.
It's quite a long time since your debut back in 1947. Now, 35 years later, is there still a field that you haven't conquered that you would really like to? Something really unusual like that?
I don't know that there's too much that I want to do. I think that certainly some of the roles like Lucia and Puritani, and of course the Jewel is gone already, I refuse to sing it anymore, they will give way to perhaps what I would call more mature roles. I'm going to sing Anna Bolena, and I am also contracted to sing Adriana Lecouvreur, which is something that is quite a challenge because it's very much, I think, an acting role. I don't know that there is going to be any sort of vast change in what I do. It depends on how the voice continues to hold up. After all, as you have pointed out, it's quite some time since I started. And indeed, I think that there's going to be a big concert in Covent Garden later on this year, because it will be already 30 years since my debut there.
Really?
So it's a sort of a 30 years association with Covent Garden concert.
Because you sing so many different parts, though, you can't, I suppose, afford to have favourites. But is there any role apart from Lucia that is very special to you?
Oh, I love Norma and, of course, Traviata. I feel that they're really human beings, whereas some of the characters become a trifle melodramatic rather than very real.
I guess a lot of roles must be like comfortable old shoes, comfortable old clothes when you sing them a lot over the years.
Oh, indeed they are. It's lovely to sing roles that you know really well. I don't ever feel that I know anything particularly well until I've done it about 10 times. You know, it's all very well to do rehearsals, but that's not the same thing as getting up on the stage and having the reaction of the public. It's very necessary to performing.
Risponda la celeste.
We rudely remind you of the years and the dates. And
I don't now, mind, it's fact.
Well, now Covent Garden
to get
reminds
a bit
you that,
proud
it's,
of it.
That it's 30 years. But you wouldn't dare think of retiring.
Yes, I think of it frequently because much as I love the singing, I do find that I feel that there are things I would like to do. For myself, it's perhaps selfish, but I would like to see certain things that I've always wanted to see. I've always wanted to do the Nile trip, for instance. Mm-hmm. I've never been to Greece to enjoy it. I've passed through Athens. I've never performed in Greece. No, not even. There's lots of portions of Italy that I'd love to see and haven't. Also of Germany. I'd like to sort of do the fjords as well. Mm. There's lots of England I'd like to revisit properly. Mm. So many things. That it all takes time, and one feels one wants to do it before one gets too old. I also love my gardening, and I love to sew. I do my needlepoint when I'm travelling, but I'd like to have more time to be in my garden in Switzerland and really see the things all the time they grow. I tend to sort of pop the bulbs in October, and I'm never there in springtime to see them flower. I'm always there sort of to see the end of things. My beautiful English border is a mess by the time I get home from Australia at the end of the Swiss summer. And I just sort of think of cutting everything back, but I never actually see them at their full and never have the pleasure of them then. So, I really would like to retire before I'm too old to manage my garden properly.
And what about a return to Holland? It's becoming almost a tradition that we see you about every second year here. Will we see you again soon?
Yes, I believe so. But not, I think, in 2 years' time. I think maybe three.
Spreading it. But you're still booking years and years in advance. You talked about imminent retirement.
I'm not booking
imminent.
Them. The theatres are asking for the time. So I give it to them and with a laugh say, you know, well, if I'm still singing, then sure. But, you know, it looks so far ahead. We really are booked into 1986, which is a bit frightening. Mm. Anything could happen.
Dame Joan Sutherland, who eventually retired in 1990. The programme was first broadcast in 1982. It's part of a series of highlights from the Radio Netherlands archives marking our Golden Jubilee. Next week, Dira Sujan meets Chilean author Isabel Allende.